So the whole motivation behind this work is to arrive at some sort of, at least a proposal to generalize the polystabilizer formalism in some way that would be reasonable. So before doing that, let me just briefly remind you what this polystabilizer formalism is all about. I guess most people know that, but just to recall it. So a Pauli operator is a tensor product of single qubit x, y, z matrices or identities, usually with some additional overall phase like plus or minus one or plus or minus I. So that's kind of the basic object, the Pauli operator. And the Pauli stabilizer formalism, which I will always, abbreviate with PSF, it allows you to describe joint eigenstates, eigenspaces of sets of commuting Pauli operators. So you're looking at equations of this form here. So the sigma I are some set of Pauli operators. And if you choose this subset correctly, then these types of equations define certain subspaces of n-qubit Hilbert spaces. And any of those subspaces is usually called a Pauli stabilizer code. If these Pauli operators obey certain properties, then there exists precisely one state psi that is described by these equations. And then any such state that is described uniquely by this set of Pauli operators is usually called a Pauli stabilizer state. Okay, so that's what this is about. If you see this for the first time, this may look rather special, but it turns out that a number of important entangled states are described in this way. For example, the cluster states that are used in one-way quantum computation, GZ states, a Torrey code, and so on. As an example, is the 1D cluster state where each, so you have n qubits and you have n Pauli operators, and the ith Pauli operator is given by an x on qubit I and a z on the nearest neighboring qubits. And then the corresponding state, that is the eigenstate of all these operators with eigenvalue 1, is the one-dimensional cluster state. Okay. And this formalism is actually very successful. So it's used in, I guess, almost all subfields of quantum information, like quantum error correction, where it forms the basis of the theory of stabilizer codes, one-way quantum computation, classical simulations of quantum circuits, and I'm thinking about the Gauss-Monil theorem here, and many other things. Okay, so that's kind of in one slide what this Pauli stabilizer formalism is about. By the way, if you want to ask a question during the talk, please feel free to do that. So why is this stabilizer formalism so successful? Or why do I think it is so successful? Well, it has certain properties. So on the one hand, it allows you to efficiently describe complicated states in Hilbert space. So you have states on n qubits, which generally speaking would, if you would have to define an arbitrary state like that, you would need exponentially many amplitudes to define. But this method gives you a way of only writing down these few Pauli stabilizer generators to describe a whole space or a whole state on n qubits. So this is about efficient description. But moreover, given this description, interesting quantities of stabilizer states and codes can be efficiently computed from there. For example, if you want to compute the expectation values of local observables or entanglement entropy and so on of a stabilizer state, you can do that by suitably manipulating these stabilizers. And somehow more generally, and not necessarily related to computational tasks, this stabilizer picture gives you a way of understanding the properties of these states by suitably manipulating these stabilizer operators. Okay, so that's kind of what is good about this stabilizer formalism. What is perhaps a disadvantage is that in the end, the number of states that you can describe with this framework is rather small. In particular, if you fix the number of qubits that you're looking at, then the number of stabilizer states is finite. And in addition, the properties of these stabilizer states, they're really quite special. For example, if you look at the entanglement between one qubit and the rest of the system, then this entanglement is either maximal, so the local density operator is maximally mixed, or there is no entanglement at all, so the qubit is just separated from the system. Another example is that no somehow non-trivial stabilizer state can occur as a unique ground state of a two local Hamiltonian, for example. Also, by definition, you're only looking at commuting stabilizers, because only when Pauli operators commute will there be possibly be a non-trivial common eigenstate or common eigenstate with eigenvalue 1. The correlation length of these states is often 0, and so on. So these things are really quite special. So just the idea of this work is to generalize this Pauli stabilizer formalism by going from arbitrary Pauli stabilizers to more general stabilizer operators in a way that I will describe next. And in doing so, we just want to, well, we want to keep the nice properties as much as possible and get rid of the disadvantages as much as possible. And given that this Pauli framework has been so successful, if you do this properly, I think this may lead to some new interesting stuff, like new insights in many body states, maybe new algorithms for classical simulations. This is somehow my own main motivation, I guess, to look at these things. And other applications may follow. But this talk is, of course, only about the formalism, and I cannot really present some killing new application yet. OK, so here's the outline. So this generalization, this will be called the framework of M states and M spaces. So I will tell you what this is about. I will give some characterizations of these concepts. I'll talk about computational complexity and classical simulations, and then some outlook and conclusions. OK, so first, M spaces and M states, what are these things about? OK, so the starting point of this whole thing is the observation that a Pauli operator is always a monomial unitary matrix. So what is a monomial unitary matrix? Well, it is basically it's a matrix where in each row and each column you have precisely one non-zero entry. And this non-zero entry has to be a complex space because the matrix is unitary. And you can see very easily that for these Pauli matrices, this is the case, of course. And if you take tensor products of monomial matrices, they stay monomial. So OK, that's a basic fact. These Pauli operators are monomial unitary operators. And then the basic idea is to just look at joint eigenspaces of arbitrary monomial unitary operators, these UIs here. So if for some subspace you can define it in terms of such eigenvalue equations where these UI are monomial, then we call it an M space. And if this, if you have some single states that you can describe uniquely in or up to a global phase in terms of such equations, we call it an M state. So the M has nothing to do with my name, honestly. So the M has to do with monomial, although it's quite convenient. Okay, so right. So some remarks. So of course, this monomiality, it is a very basis-dependent property, right? It is a property of a matrix, and so you really have to specify which basis you're looking at. We will always work with the computational basis in this talk, and whenever I write something like this, so x, y, z, and so on, I'll always mean a computational basis state. So mathematically speaking, a nice property of these monomial matrices is whenever you have a group that is generated by monomial matrices, then every matrix in that group will be monomial. In that sense, the description of any operator in this group will be rather rather elegant somehow. What else do I need to say? Yeah, so whereas in the Pauli stabilizer case, you know, these stabilizer operators, they always commute. Here, I don't require that. So the UI need not commute, nor do they need to be tensor product operators. So they can be operators that act globally on the Hilbert space. Whatever I will say later will be independent of that. What we will do is restrict to you to stabilizer generators that have efficiently computable matrix elements. That's kind of a basic requirement, quite natural. So for example, if you have stabilizer operators that are k-local, or given as some polynomial size quantum circuit of elementary monomial operators, that's all allowed. OK, so is this definition somehow clear? Yeah, OK, good. Right. So if you see this definition for the first time, it is not clear at all whether this is relevant at all. Right? It looks like something that could be nice mathematically, but maybe does not cover any interesting state. And I think here it's quite surprising that there is a rather long list of well-known quantum states that are covered by this definition. So for one, of course, as I mentioned before, all stabilizer states encodes for qubits. Also, if you look at generalizations for qdits, these corresponding generalized Pauli operators are monomial and unitary. So they are also fitting in this framework. The AKLT model, which is not really obvious that this is the case. I will define that actually later. If you look at Kitaev's quantum double model, so which describe both abelian and non-abelian anions, also those are covered by this framework. Then W states, Dicke states, and actually a number of other states. So they all fit into this framework, which is basically, I guess this is one basic observation of this work, that this is something that applies to states that we care about, so to say. Okay, I didn't give that. It's not that important for the talk. I didn't give the definition. So basically what you want is that given some x, some basis state x, if you apply this monomial operator, you want to know what the corresponding basis state is that you get and what the phase is that you get out. But don't worry about this definition. It's not that crucial here. Okay. Just a very simple example is the W states. So here they are. It's just an equal superposition over all states with Hamming weight 1. So there is one excitation. So what are the stabilizers of this state? Well, you have swap gates acting between nearest neighboring qubits. Swap gates are permutation matrices, so they are monomial. And you have this diagonal matrix T here. So it's a tensor product of single qubit operators. They are diagonal. So this omega here is just an nth root of unity. If you apply this T to any computational base state X, you just, of course, get the same state up to a global phase. And this phase is given by the Hamming weight of X minus 1. This is just somehow built in into this construction here. So if you look at any state that is an eigenvector with eigenvalue 1 of this T here, you need that this phase is equal to 1. So the Hamming weight of X should be equal to 1. So then you need to have a state that is only a superposition over those standard basis states with Hamming weight 1. And then enforcing that it should be an eigenstate of all swaps between nearest neighbor qubits, the only resulting state that can be an eigenstate is precisely this W state. So that's a simple example of an M state, which is not a stabilizer state. Okay. Another less trivial example is the AKLT model. So the AKLT model in its simplest form, this is describes a system of spin one particles arranged on a one-dimensional chain, either with open or periodic boundary conditions. And the Hamiltonian is given as such. So it's a sum of two body terms, one minus h here, where the h acts on qubits I and I plus one, and is a projector on the subspace spanned by these four states here. And the ground state level of this Hamiltonian is corresponds to energy zero. And it turns out that this Hamiltonian is frustration free. So the ground state minimizes the energies for each of the local terms. This simply means that the ground space corresponds to all states that are eigenvectors with eigenvalue one of all these local terms H here. So for people who know the details of this AKLT model, this is in fact not a standard definition. It is the same as a standard definition up to a local unitary rotation. So in that sense, it is perfectly equivalent, but you may not recognize some of these definitions here. Now, so why is this model covered by this stabilizer formalism? Well, you can define a unitary U that sends 0, 1 to minus 1, 0, and 1, 0 to minus 0, 1. So it does that. Somehow similar for 0, 2, and 2, 0. For 1, 2, and 2, 1, it always flips and gives you an extra phase there. And it sends 0, 0 to 1, 1 to 2, 2, and back to 0, 0. if you look at the eigenstates with eigenvalue 1 of this operator, you will see that they are precisely these guys. And therefore, the ground level of the AKLT model, being the space of all states that are eigenvectors with eigenvalue 1 of the H's, is the same as the space of all psi's that are eigenvectors with eigenvalue 1 of these U's. And this U is obviously monomial because it sends every standard basis state to another one up to some phase. So that's what the monomial operator does. And therefore, this is an M space. Okay. Good. Okay, this was somehow to motivate that this formalism covers some interesting states that are not stabilizer states. So now what I'd like to do is show you how, by manipulating these monomial stabilizer operators, you can get some insight into what the properties of the corresponding states actually are. Okay, so for the moment, we look at M states. So just again, an M state is a state that is uniquely defined by equations of this kind, where each UI can be any unitary monomial operator. And now we need to define two groups. The first one is something quite familiar. So you look at the stabilizer group, which is simply the group generated by these monomial operators, UI. We will assume that this group is finite because in each of the relevant examples, this is the case. I don't think this is crucial, but just makes things easier mathematically. And as I said, this group will consist entirely of monomial operators. And then associated with this group, we define another group, a permutation group P, as follows. So it is kind of a basic fact that if you have any monomial unitary operator, you can write that as a product of a permutation matrix and a diagonal matrix. Right? So permutation matrix basically tells you which of the entries of U are non-zero, and the diagonal tells you which phases you have to put on each non-zero diagonal element. Yes?
And in this case, it seems like you get a stabilizer from each of the, you know, the bigger dimension of the co-space, the bigger the stabilizer group. What's the special thing that makes this true? Normally, I
think. I'm sorry, I didn't get the question. So is it this?
From each phi 1, phi I, you get a UI, right? Like UI n plus 1.
No, so what I said is that, this HI is a projector and the plus one eigenstates are precisely these guys. And this U is an operator, it happens to be monomial, and the plus one eigenstate of U happens to be these guys as well. So they coincide.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this case, it seems like the bigger your ground state space, the more stabilizer generators you have, which is opposite to what you normally have with stabilizer code. So is there something special that makes this translation give you exactly the thing? I mean,
so why do you say that the more states I don't see how you get that from here?
So all the ones that gives you plus one eigenstates, they are part of the ground. Well, they kind of, the more you have of those, the bigger your ground states will be, right? And the bigger your co-space will be.
I think that really depends very much on the details.
So if you take a different example, you try to do this, it won't work. I'm just wondering what's special about this that makes this work.
I really can't say.
Well, I mean, each of the basis states is a balanced superposition of, each of the basis states in the subspace, psi 1 through psi 4, mm-hmm. is a balanced superposition, and the kets that appear in each of them are all distinct. So that seems like once you have that, the phases, you may need some additional condition on the phases. But that's kind of close to what you need.
Yeah. It won't work in general.
It's fine. Okay. Right. So as I said, every monomial unitary matrix can be written as a product of a permutation matrix and a diagonal matrix. And we now look at the set that you get by considering all the permutation matrices arising from the stabilizer group. So I would denote this by this bar operation. This set turns out to be a group as well, which is not very hard to see. So if you have two operators U and U prime from this group, then you take for each the corresponding permutation matrix, and you multiply those together, that's the same as first taking the product of U and U prime and taking the corresponding permutation matrix of that guy. So that's quite elementary to see. So this permutation group is indeed a group, and in fact is generated by just the permutation matrices associated with the generators of the initial group. Now, if you choose these guys to be independent, then the new generators of P may no longer be independent, but they are still generators of permutation group. So basically, this bar operation gives you a homomorphism from this group to that group. And then we need to look at the orbits of this permutation group. So this permutation group acts in a natural way on the standard basis, and the orbit of this action of some basis state x will be denoted by Ox. Okay, that's kind of standard. And now this is something very simple that you should remember for the rest of the talk. So if you have some basis vector y, then it will lie in the orbit of some other state x, if and only if there exists some permutation matrix P that maps x to y. And this is the same as asking that there should exist some element in the initial stabilizer group, so a monomial operator in the initial group, and some phase such that U of x is equal to y up to this phase. This is simply by definition of this permutation that you get. So I will use that later. Okay. So what we now like to do is I would like to understand, given some M state and the corresponding stabilizer group in terms of these monomial operators, can we learn what the state looks like? So what are the properties of the state determined by the properties of the corresponding group? And then actually it turns out to be rather simple. So suppose we fix some arbitrary standard basis state x that has a non-zero overlap with our state. Right? Suppose this is given to us. Then the first claim that I make is that all the amplitudes of psi are zero outside of the orbit of this x. And how do you see that? Well, so it's basically this one line here. So you rewrite psi to be proportional to this object here, which you can do because you chose this overlap to be non-zero. And now you use, so now you look at this operator here. So this is the sum over all operators in the stabilizer group normalized by the number of elements in the group. And for whatever unitary group G that you have, don't mind if it is monomial or not, this operator will be the projector on the common plus one eigenspace of all operators in this group. But by definition, this projector is just one-dimensional, but because we have assumed that there exists only a single state that is stabilized by these operators, so this will precisely be the projector onto psi. Okay, so you plug this in, right? And now you have here that psi is basically given by a sum of these terms here. Now, given x, and you apply an operator u from the stabilizer, you can only end up with something that lies in the orbit of x by definition. So here you see that you can only pick up amplitudes that lie within this orbit. That's somehow the first claim. The second claim is that all amplitudes that appear here will have the same modulus. So all amplitudes in this orbit. And that's also quite easy to see. So suppose that you take some standard basis state in this orbit, then by definition of the construction, you know that there will exist some element u in the stabilizer and some phase that maps x to y up to this phase. That's this single line I described just on the previous slide on the bottom. And if you then look at the amplitude of psi corresponding to y, you plug in this equation here, you see then that this amplitude will be the same as the amplitude for x up to this phase psi. So this means that for all basis states in this orbit, the amplitude will be the same as the amplitude for x up to this phase. And this is precisely this claim. It also tells you that in order to find out what this relative phase is, the only thing you need to do is to find some element in the stabilizer group that maps x to y. And then the phase that pops out will be the phase that you're looking for. So any U that does this gives you the right phase here. I will denote this phase then by this xi x of y. Okay, so what we found is that if you have an M state, it will always look like this, right? So it will be a uniform superposition over one of the orbits of the permutation group, and the phases that appear in this uniform superposition, they are given by this rule that I just described. So this gives you kind of almost a complete characterization of what the structure of this state should be in terms of the corresponding stabilizer group. And this equation really holds for all examples that I gave. So AKLT, stabilizer states W, and so on. What's also good to know is that this will always be a superposition over a single orbit. So once you know a single element of an orbit, you know somehow all the non-zero amplitudes that will appear here. Okay, so I don't know what is the next slide. Okay. This is a figure that I will come back to later. So this is what this picture tells you is, so every white dot is a standard basis state. The blue circles represent the orbits of the permutation group. And then this tells you that basically there exists one orbit of this permutation group that is associated to the state, and all the others are somehow irrelevant to the problem. Okay, so what I haven't mentioned yet is, well, if you're given this stabilizer group, can you determine actually which of the orbits the state is actually a superposition over? And you can also figure that out by looking only at these stabilizer operators. Okay, so how do you do that? So suppose that you know the orbit that psi is a superposition over. What properties does this orbit have to fulfill? Well, it's the following. So suppose for a moment that you have some stabilizer operator x in the group that has x as an eigenstate with some eigenvalue lambda. If you then look at the amplitude of the state psi corresponding to x, you plug in this equation, then you see that that this amplitude should be equal to itself times this phase lambda. And since we know that this amplitude is non-zero because x belongs to its own orbit, this lambda will have to be 1. Okay, so that doesn't look like much, but let me just state it. It means that if you have any stabilizer operator that has x as an eigenstate, then the corresponding eigenvalue has to be 1. Now, it turns out that this condition is also sufficient. And this is stated here somehow. So given any basis state x, then you know that the orbit of x is the right one that appears in this decomposition here, if and only if, for every element u in the stabilizer group, which has x as an eigenvector, the corresponding eigenvalue has to be 1. Okay, and since u is monomial and x is a standard basis state, so it is the basis in which u is monomial, having u as an eigenvector basically means that the xx diagonal element of this operator is just given by this 1 here. Okay, so I didn't show you why this is sufficient. That's kind of slightly more complex. I guess you just have to believe that. And then this gives you basically, in principle, an explicit characterization of any M state in terms of the group. So given these generators, you can build up the group, the permutation group, the orbit, and learn completely what this state is about.
Excuse me. So I understood that in the previous groups, it was important to know already in advance that you have a unique state
that
has an eigenvector for
right.
All the... Is there a condition to see that, or how?
So I will come back to that in a second, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So just to give you an example, so given this simple example of the W state, how do all these concepts arise here? So as I said, a W state is stabilized by a bunch of swap gates acting on nearest neighbor qubits and this tensor product of diagonal operators here. So what is it? What is the corresponding permutation group? Well, a swap gate is itself a permutation, so the corresponding permutation is just the swap itself. And this diagonal gate, it is diagonal, so the corresponding permutation is trivial. It's just the identity matrix. So the permutation group corresponding to these generators will simply be the group generated by all these swaps, which is very simple. What are the orbits of this group? That's also very simple. So if you have some standard basis state x, then by applying swaps, of course, you can swap everything around, and you will get all basis states that have the same number of ones or the same Hamming weight as the string x. Okay, so there are only basically n plus one orbits. And you see now that this W state is indeed a superposition over one orbit. Namely, it is the orbit of this state there. What I also mentioned is how you can compute the phases in this superposition by looking at the operators in the group. So what I said before is, if you have some state y in the orbit of x, then the corresponding phase can be computed by identifying one element in the stabilizer group that maps x to y, and then the corresponding phase that appears there will be the phase of the corresponding y in this superposition. Now here, any of these states that arise in the superposition can be mapped to x by simply applying swaps. And swaps are permutations, so there are no phases that appear there except for the phase one. This somehow illustrates that this phase that I defined previously will be one, which is indeed in agreement with the definition of these states. Okay, so of course we're not learning anything we didn't know here. This is just to illustrate what these concepts look like. Okay. Another example are the Pauli stabilizer states themselves, which are also M states. So what do we learn about those guys by applying these observations? So a Pauli operator sigma, it is always a product of a permutation matrix P and D. A permutation matrix P and a diagonal matrix D, where P is simply a product of X's and D is a product of Z's, right? So X's are permutations and Z's are diagonal. Therefore, given any Pauli operator, the corresponding permutation matrix will always have this form here. So it's a product of X's and identities, basically, which I denote like that. And therefore, without knowing anything else about stabilizer states, you can infer that the corresponding permutation group will have to be a group of X-type operators, right? So you just collect a certain subset of bit strings U and the corresponding Pauli operators, the Pauli X operators. And since P is a group, this S will have to be a linear subspace of n bit strings, so a linear subspace modulo 2. And then the orbit of this group P will always have this form. This is basically because if I have any, so remember XU is just a tensor product where, well, I guess you cannot read. Right, so you have a bit string U1 to UN. This XU is just giving you this tensor product of X's. And if you apply XU to any standard basis state, you just shift it by the vector u. That's just by simply applying the definition of these x operators. And therefore, the orbit of this, an orbit of this permutation group will simply consist, as you see here, as some coset or cospace of this linear space S here. And by now applying the recipe of these M states, you find immediately that every Pauli stabilizer state will be a uniform superposition that looks like that. So it will be a uniform superposition where you sum over all basis states that lie in some coset or cospace of some linear space S with certain phases X given there. Okay, so this was known before, of course, but somehow to show that you needed to play a bit more somehow detailed stabilizer tricks, and here this rolls out somehow as a rather direct consequence. Okay, so what happens now if you don't have a unique eigenstate? So you have an M space now instead of an M state. And then using quite similar ideas, you can construct a whole basis of this M space, which I call the orbit basis. So it is a basis of the space given by, let's say, D vectors, where each of these vectors, each of these basis vectors will be a uniform superposition over precisely one orbit. So it has a form that is very similar to the form of the M state that I just described. And if you compare the orbits arising in different states in this basis, they will always have to be disjoint. And this is kind of interesting because it means that the dimension of any M space will always be upper bounded by the total number of orbits of your permutation group. So this gives you kind of a combinatorial bound to understand how large this space can be. And as I said, each of these individual basis vectors has a form that is very similar to the form of an M state as I discussed before. So understanding which orbits appear in this basis and which do not can be understood kind of in an analogous way with the criterion that looks like that one. So the statement would be that the orbit of X is one of the orbits appearing in this basis if and only if this precise same quantity, this precise same property holds. Okay, so was there a question? X is no. So yeah. So if this thing never happens, then it is a trivial situation.
Can I see the previous slide?
The previous slide. So I already went back, right? Oh, so which previous slide do you mean?
Just this previous.
This previous slide. This one.
Previous. The one that says phi and X has none. They're not orthogonal.
Oh. This one.
Yeah.
Okay, so then for these more general M spaces, you have a picture like this. So again, you have the white dots are the computational basis states. The red circles are the blue circles are the orbits of the permutation group, and then some of these orbits will correspond to basis states of the space, and some others will be irrelevant. And no two basis states correspond to the same orbit. And just to give a short example, so the AKLT model is a nice example here, I think. So I won't go into many details. So, but I mentioned before that you have this two Q-trit monomial operator that defines the space, acting on qubits I and I plus 1 throughout. So if you want to have the corresponding permutation matrix, well, you just have to set all these minus 1 phases to 1, and that's the corresponding permutation matrix. And now the orbits of the group associated with that, they are quite simple. So you see here that you can basically, by this and this relation, you can swap the Q-trits around. And here you can map pairs of zeros, ones, and twos into each other. And then it's easy to figure out what the orbits are. So the orbits are basically determined by the parity of the number of zeros, ones, and twos in your basis state. Turns out if n, the total number of systems, is even, then there are precisely four orbits. So all basis states with an even number of zeros, ones, and twos, odd number of zeros, and even number of ones and twos, and so on. Precisely four. And by only doing that, you learn that the ground level of the AKLT model will have to be at most fourfold degenerate. By doing a bit more work, you can actually show that for periodic boundary conditions, the degeneracy is precisely 4, and you can construct these 4 basis states by going to these monomial prescriptions, so to say. And if you have a system with open boundary conditions, then you have precisely 1 state, or is it vice versa? Might be vice versa. I don't remember. So if you have open boundary conditions, you have precisely 1 state. So you have to rule out 3 of these orbits by applying this criterion that I mentioned before. But you can all do that, and what rolls out are the standard basis vectors of this AKLT model that people have found before. Okay, so some comments about computational complexity and efficiency. So if you look at the standard Pauli stabilizer formalism, then there are a whole bunch of questions that you can solve efficiently for all possible stabilizer states encoded. So given whatever set of stabilizers, you ask some question, for example, compute you know, the reduced density operator of these 5 qubits and so on. You can do that efficiently regardless of what Pauli stabilizers you're given. And this situation will change for sure in this context because you can show that already for rather simple, well-chosen monomial stabilizers, such problems will be hard, so like NP hard, basically. This is briefly described here. So imagine that you have an M state described in terms of even diagonal unitary operators acting on at most 3 qubits, which is certainly an M state. And the description that you're given is somehow the input to the problem. And then what you're asked, for example, is to compute or to estimate with some high accuracy single qubit reduced density operators. Or what you could also ask is to classically sample the distribution arising from psi in the standard basis. For Pauli stabilizers, these things are easily done. For arbitrary diagonal unitary stabilizers acting on at most 3 qubits, this simple problem already turns out to be NP-hard. The proof is rather straightforward. It's basically a reduction to the 3 set. So the conclusion from this is that if you're looking for truly general purpose algorithms that will work for all M spaces or M states with, let's say, 3 local stabilizers, this will not exist, right? That sounds, of course, bad, but in the end, it is not bad. It's just, you know, this means that this framework is somehow too big to hope for a general efficient simulation. But this does not mean that you cannot arrive at interesting simulations for subclasses of states. And that's somehow something that one can actually study. So what you can do is somehow coin conditions on the stabilizers that guarantee that simulations will be efficient, and then hopefully this will be a large class. So let's look again at the problem of, you know, given some arbitrary M state, the question, can one sample the corresponding distribution in the standard basis efficiently or not? And this is the case whenever these two problems have an efficient classical solution. So what you should be able to do is find an arbitrary X that has a non-zero overlap with your state. What you should also be able to do is to generate a uniformly random element from the orbit of this element. If you're able to do that, then you can sample this distribution efficiently. And this is simply because, well, we know that this state will be a uniform superposition over the orbit of X, right? And then a measurement simply gives you a random element from X. In addition, generating a uniformly random element from X, from the orbit of X, can be done by simply generating a uniformly random element from the permutation group and then applying it to X. So this will also give you a random element from this orbit. And so people have done lots of work on generating random elements in groups, in finite groups, given a bunch of generators. So you could apply these techniques here to arrive at classical simulations, if you're lucky.
Is it obvious that these conditions are satisfied just for Pauli stabilizers?
So I'll come back to that in a second. So I would say the first one is not obvious, and the second one is pretty obvious. And somehow this is basically the content of the Grossmann-Nil theorem, right? In that sense, it is not totally obvious, I would say. If you can do that, then you can basically simulate every Clifford circuit. But I'll come back to it in a second. Yeah. So these are conditions that ensure you can sample this distribution efficiently. You need some additional conditions to ensure that you can estimate local expectation values efficiently, classically. So they're given here. So you should be able to decide efficiently, given some string y, does y belong to the orbit of x? And then once you know that it belongs to the orbit, you have to be able to compute this phase arising there. And if you're able to do that, then you can estimate local expectation values, and the techniques are somehow sampling methods. Okay. So one message that I should mention here is that these conditions, they are in fact satisfied for all, or let's say basically all, of the examples that I gave before. So they are not really exotic or something. So by doing that, you can simulate all these systems efficiently, classically, in the way that I mentioned. This does not tell you anything really new, because for all of these systems, we basically knew that already. But nevertheless, it gives you like a unified method that you can apply and to all these quite different looking systems in one go, so to say.
Question? Does it help to understand AKLT model, the excited states of AKLT model? Because we have been focusing on the ground state.
Yes. I don't know. Could be not at all. I really couldn't say. I thought about it that it might be interesting to look at that, but I have no idea at this point. So to come back to these Pauli stabilizer states. So we know that this Pauli stabilizer state will be a uniform superposition over basis states that lie in a coset of a linear space S with certain phases. So we now want to sample this distribution efficiently. So what we need to be able to do is to first figure out what this coset is. So what is X basically, and then given that we know X, can we generate a random element from the orbit of X? Now the first problem will be not trivial, and the other will be much simpler. So the Pauli stabilizer generators, let's say they're given by sigma n, sigma 1 to sigma n, then the corresponding permutation group is generated by the corresponding x-type operators that are associated with each of these sigmas. So let's say they are x corresponding to some string ui, and the corresponding permutation group will just be generated by these guys, and this gives you a collection of x-type operators where the u's lie in this subspace, this binary subspace S. And then generating a random element in this orbit is quite easy, because it basically boils down to generating a random element in this space S, which is also easy because you have a generating set of this space. So you just basically form a uniformly random linear combination of these generators, and then you end up with this random element, and then you add X to that. So that was one part of the answer, so to say.
What X is, like,
the
basis vector, but which
basis
are you using?
That's the computational basis.
Okay, just computational.
Yeah, so X is basically, it's a string of bits. Yeah. And then figuring out which X has a non-zero overlap with this state basically boils down to figuring out which coset you are you're summing over. And then you need to apply this criterion that tells you that the orbit of X is the correct orbit in this decomposition if and only if, given any operator in a stabilizer group that has X as an eigenvector, the eigenvalue has to be 1. So if this is true for some X, then X will be the right orbit. Now, for the case of these Pauli stabilizers, this condition is actually rather easy to understand, because a Pauli operator that has some standard basis state as an eigenvector will always have to be a Pauli operator that is diagonal. So it will have to be a Pauli operator that is just given as a product of X's, of Z's. That's the only Pauli operator for which this can happen. So that's the only Pauli operator or set of Pauli operators for which you should worry about somehow. So to understand this criterion, you should basically look at the subgroup of Pauli stabilizers in the stabilizer group that are just products of Z's. And you basically have to understand, you have to find a generating set of that group. And once you have that, understanding when this is true and when not is rather easy. It boils down to finding the solution to a system of linear equations, which I can't really go into detail here, but that's somehow the basic idea. So then, so this thing can be done efficiently. This gives you the proper x, and then you can basically sample this distribution. Okay, so I'm almost done, or I am done. So what are the conclusions of this work? So this monomial state-based formalism is a proposal for generalization of the Pauli state-based formalism. And what I wanted to show here that this framework has two features which I think are attractive. On the one hand, it contains a whole bunch of state families that I think are important and going considerably beyond the Pauli stabilizer formalism, and therefore not being restricted to these special features of Pauli stabilizer states. So it's significantly broader, but nevertheless, you still have this notion that properties of states can be understood in a more or less transparent way by manipulating these stabilizer groups. And then somehow more concretely, you can give characterizations of these M states as uniform superposition states. You can construct a basis of each M space. And then for certain subclasses of states and spaces, you have efficient classical simulations. So just an outlook. So I think what is the main contribution so far is kind of perhaps an unification of what we knew already, to put it in a bigger framework. Of course, it would be very interesting to arrive at new applications. So one thing that I did already is to apply these techniques to obtain efficient classical simulations of quantum Fourier transforms over abelian groups. So I actually gave a talk about this paper last week, so you should go to that one. But that's one kind of application that arose so far. But there are many other things that you can ask. So, you know, most importantly, I think it would be nice to define and construct new state families that seem interesting and that can be treated with this framework. Also, what are connections to matrix product states and PEPs and so on if you restrict to local generators? There appears to be an interesting link between monomial matrices and representation theory and so on. So I think there are several things that one could try there. Okay, thank you.
So for polys, we have this Clifford group, obviously.
Right.
And then you also get a simulation, of the action of Clifford group unitaries. So in general, is there some way of deriving some set of operations that you can simulate as well as just the states?
That's, of course, a very good question. I have no idea. So for sure, if you want to have a group of operations that somehow preserve the structure of all monomial stabilizers, that would be only something trivial somehow, because
sure.
They are too big. So you would have to look at subclasses of monomial guys, and then the corresponding group, and then, so this, yeah, so, like the stuff I talked about last week, these finite abelian groups, maybe going to non-abelian groups might give you some kind of operations of that kind, non-abelian Fourier transforms maybe, but I really don't know. But that's, of course, an important next step.
Yeah, I try to understand this. So you have a collection for unitary transformation. Then the orbit, the equal with the superposition of the orbit, this unitary transformation gave you this state.
Right.
There's two questions. So that means this unitary operator will always have at least one eigenvalue equal to one. Because equal superposition, but that imply the unitary operator have one eigenvalue equal to one.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Then another question says, usually I believe those unitary operator can act on overlapping qubits.
Yes.
And so they're commuting, so they should commute.
No, they should not commute.
Hmm?
They should not commute. They don't have to commute.
Oh, they don't have to commute?
No, they of course they can commute, but they don't have to commute.
I see.
Yeah. Like
if they don't commute, there's a concern that maybe they generate all possible superposition, you get the product states then.
What do you mean if they generate all possible?
Because if they don't commute, then the combination of two unit transformation can give you some more and more unit transformation and
well, it will so
I'm worried about the orbit that goes through every space.
I mean, if you take something generic, of course, you know, that might happen. But
so
but here it doesn't, because there are examples of.
Then the question really became, if you pick generic unit transformation which do not commute, then you may generate every, you know, your orbit will cover whole states. Then the question is that, do we have some understanding of what kind of unit transformation which only give you a set, the orbit do not cover every state? So that would correspond to some kind of a classification of this more interesting states.
Right, but I think even before you answer that, you may also want to ask, you know, can we understand, given some class of generators, whether there is a non-trivial state? That is generically not even true. So you should cut down there in the first place, I think. So if you just write down a bunch of operators, monomial or not, they are very likely not to have a common eigenstate.
Okay.
Right?
But I think you're mistaken. I mean, because it doesn't have to be, the superpositions can have different signs, the different terms of superposition.
Or don't have to be, or equal weight, the phase can be different.
The phase
can
be different.
Yes, yes.
And so already for polys, you can get things where the orbit is the whole, is every basis.
Okay,
state,
so equal weight only means absolute value are the same.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So yeah, I guess it is not an equal superposition, but a uniform superposition.
Let me see. Okay. So I try to say, so the key here is that to find a set of unitary transformation which do not generate, whose orbit are finite.
But I guess, as Daniel said, so you could have the whole orbit and the phases make the state non-trivial somehow.
I see.
You
can
have an entangled
state.
Like
cluster
a graph state.
State.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cluster state has every...
Right.
Has all the basis states appearing in it.
Perhaps you partly already answered this question. I was curious about, for instance, if I give you a state, do you have conditions to be able to say, okay, I can construct a monomial group such that this is the unique, the unique plus one eigenvector?
In a way, yes, but the answer is not very satisfying, I think. So what I said here is that if you have an M state, then the corresponding, if you have an M state, then it will always have to be a uniform superposition over some orbit. Now you can show that whenever you have a state that is a uniform superposition over some set of basis vectors, it will always be an M state. So this is the class of M state. So it's an if and only if. But you know, if you
so it's not a problem to match the phases to show that there is a
no, but somehow the stabilizer that you would construct there is not very interesting. So it is rather artificial and not very useful, but technically, every uniform superposition state is an M state. But as I said, the stabilizer that you're constructing there is not very nice. So
it's kind of ad hoc with the phases.
Thanks.
I think with this formula, I can ask my question.
Okay,
so usually, when you choose the arbitrary set unitary transformation, you probably cannot find a state like that, which is a
Of course. So, but they have
so
to.
So there should be some consistency. I try to see whether we know the set unitary transformation need to satisfy certain conditions such that using their orbit you can construct.
So you mean consistency in the sense that there should exist? So the question, given a bunch of operators, does there exist a common eigenstate?
Yes.
Is that the question? But that question is certainly non-trivial, right? It is also computationally very hard to answer that. So in general, I don't think that one can hope
but,
understand
but,
that.
But if they're commuting unit transformation, then that should be automatically satisfied.
No, because you want eigenvalue to be plus one everywhere.
I see.
So if you have a bunch of diagonal operators and you ask, is there a joint eigenstate? The answer is always yes. But if you ask, is there a joint eigenstate with eigenvalue 1 everywhere, that's hard.
In a sense, if you are given the group, you can take the trace of that equation and see
Yeah, but that might be hard. You want this thing to be non-zero, right?
Yes.
But that might be hard to determine.
So you mean because you are not given the group as explicitly?
Well, because this is an exponentially big object, right? So you have n qubit operators, you have many of them. So computing this trace will be hard generally.
The typical situation is that you are given the generators.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
Not
yeah.
The group as such.
The group is exponentially bigger than
so
the generators.
So the exponential is to construct the group from the generators.
Yes. Yes.
I'm trying to understand Xiaobian's question. So I don't know if the point was saying that the M states are too big a class. That maybe we should restrict to a subclass where we have a better handle on the operators. We can describe using the operators, not with the states. I don't know.
So I don't know. Maybe you can repeat.
I don't know. So maybe the question. So for this state, you require that when unitary operator act on this state, we should go back itself.
Of course.
Back in random one. Okay. Can you allow some phase difference? So up to the phase, go back yourself.
Yeah, because then you can absorb the phase in the unitary, and then you have a new unitary.
Okay.
In that sense, it's fine.
So this define a class of states.
Yes.
Called M, I see. Let's see.
So, but maybe I can comment. What is missing in everything I said here is some. So I just took existing states, so to say, and kind of realize that they are fitting
yeah.
in this framework, but what would be very interesting is to construct some new class that you are guaranteed to have
yeah.
this kind of description and then analyze these states with these methods.
Yeah.
That is
okay, maybe I just want to make one comment here, is that in this string net states, but its construction very similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
And the consistent condition I'm asking about actually is Pandic identity in the string net setup. So this seems a more general setup.
Yes, I think
so,
it is.
So I don't know whether one can have this generalization for Pandic identity. So in this more general setup. But another related question is once you construct this state, whether one can construct a Hamiltonian such that this state is a ground state.
So
suppose you know this collection unitary operator. Just using this unitary operator, can you construct a Hamiltonian such this state?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
You can do that. I mean, if the unitaries that you're given are, let's say, k local or whatever, then you just construct the projectors onto the plus one eigenstate of these unitaries, and this gives you Hamiltonian, basically.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Not very, yeah.
But it does guarantee this the ground state of Hamiltonian, this one's unique ground state.
No, you have to prove that.
Oh, I see.
But there are there are methods to do that.
Okay. Thank you.